Tuesday, April 5th, my five-day trip of trails through Texas came to an end Tuesday afternoon, a low-key, homespun note, right on the courthouse square at Johnson City. I'd spent the morning at the ranch and the beauty parlor, gave Stu Udall and George Hartzog and Simone Poulain lunch, and then drove in to the boyhood home to meet Linda. To prize Linda away from her schoolwork, even one afternoon, is no easy thing. She'd agreed to meet us there at 2 o'clock. The dwindled ranks of the newspaper entourage that had gone with us across Texas at the boyhood home being filled in by Jesse and Liz on the number of visitors who had come through the almost 11 months since it was opened. It's about 50,000 people. This is actually those who've signed the guest book. There are always some who don't. Representing every state in the Union and some 30 or so foreign countries, Linda wore a deep gold linen dress. On her right hand, the ring George had given her. On the courthouse square, some 500 or 600 Banco County folks were assembled, a shirt-sleeve crowd mostly, except County Judge Martin Barrow and Judge Tom Ferguson and Mayor George Byers were dressed up in their Sunday clothes for that part in the ceremony. It was a very small speaker stand, and a cordon of Cub Scouts and Rainbow Girls, and a quartet of high school girls who sang "This Is My Land, My Country, and America," all dressed alike in blue. It found to our dismay there was no Johnson City band. Jesse Hunter, bless her, had discovered these girls to provide the musical note for the occasion. I was really quite proud of us. County judge said in accepting them, "The trees cannot be measured for today alone, but for the future grace and dignity they will bring to our town." And Tom Ferguson overwhelmed me by his introduction of me, using a phrase from the Song of Solomon that was altogether lovely. "Truly, in feature, mind, heart, and hand, she is altogether lovely." When something like that happens, I feel I have to swallow hard and start all over again. For once, I had very little to do or say, only that this is one of the happiest times I'd ever participated in a tree planting, because everything we do begins at home. It radiates out from there. And how proud I was when visitors came from all over the country to stay with us, and I could take them and show them the improvements in Johnson City. Particularly pointed out to Stuart Udall, that great conservationist, "See, we are doing it here, too." But Linda was the star of the occasion. She always writes or says what she wants to and wants no help. It was simple and brief. "I wanted to have these trees planted here because I've always been a little jealous of them, trees. I've always wanted to have my feet in the ground, my roots, and my head in the stars." And she spoke of her grandmother and how much she'd meant to her and how much she'd told her about Johnson City. And then she shoveled a few shovels of dirt in around one of the trees. There are 6 lovely live oaks with oval curbing and a little sprinkler system. They stretch along the street between the courthouse and the so-called Opera House, where long ago, Lyndon's grandmother, Rebecca Baines, had met young Representative Sam Johnson when she brought a troupe from Blanco to put on a little play. Mr. Carter had traveled hundreds of miles to nurseries looking for just the right trees. These he'd found close to home on somebody's ranch, and their shape and size are really great. As someone was mentioning that Linda was a senior at the University of Texas and that she had given the trees the money she'd made by writing a magazine article about her trip of See America last year, and some other reference to the University of Texas, Mr. Carter, right behind me, piped up, "But it took an old Aggie boy to plant them." He's really leaving his mark on Johnson City, too, and a good mark it is. Linda leaned over and placed the little bronze plaque after she'd finished shoveling. It says, quite simply, "In memory of Sam and Rebecca Johnson, who love this town. Presented by their granddaughter, Linda Bird Johnson." And the date. I shall drive past every time I come to Johnson City. I saw Mrs. Liddon and, of course, Mabel Stribling. I expect she'd help round up the crowd. Barry Allen was there, but A.W. was off on more important business. Kitty Clyde had turned school out to swell the crowd. And really, here in Johnson City, it's no great thing to see the First Lady or a member of the President's Cabinet. So it was local pride in wanting to make it a nice occasion that had brought them there around the square. And among the old folks, I dare say it was really a memory of Sam and Rebecca Johnson. Then, as the crowd broke up, I gathered up Stu and George Herzog and Liz with James Pitt, and we set out to look at the little park that Life magazine is donating to Johnson City. It's beginning to take shape. Mr. Warwick was right at work on the sidewalks and the delightful little low stone wall that surrounds the park. As soon as we get the sprinkler system in and the black dirt hauled in and leveled, then Mr. Carter can put in the shrubs, crepe myrtle, retama, red yucca, and we'll have something to be proud of. I was delighted to get a picture of Mr. Warwick with James Pitt and Stuart Udall, and then began to look around for Mr. Carter, but couldn't find him. He'd melted away, and him more responsible than anybody for whatever charm it may have. I said goodbyes up and down the street to the remaining faithful few of our newspaper brigade, and then goodbye to Stu and George, and back up to the boyhood home to have a little visit with Linda before she went back in to study. The newspaper girls had been more speculative and more interested about the ring she was wearing, and also about her trips for the summer. Spain, would George Hamilton be going? Warren, what school friend? Linda is getting quite accomplished at laughing and saying nothing, although sometimes she is a little bitter and ascorbic with them, and I wish she wouldn't be. And then I said goodbye to everybody along about 4 o'clock and went back to the ranch and drove all over the ranch quite alone, taking in great drafts of view and silence, and finally drove to the Scharnhorst to look more closely at a sight that hurt my heart. Dale, meaning to do something that all good ranchers do, rid the land of juniper, cedar, had turned in some cedar cutters into the Scharnhorst, but had not had time to follow them with the repeated instructions. They had left stumps, ugly scars 3 feet high, all over the landscape. In the great meadow there were a few large cedars, with trunks as big as a man's body. They had cut those, too, leaving large stumps. I contended a few wouldn't hurt, big ones, Dale said, but they'd have seeds. They'd start more. When I climbed the great granite outcropping, I found that they had scaled that, too, and cut the few cedars that had sustained life in a teacup full of soil on the very top of this huge granite uplift. A cow couldn't have gotten a mouthful of grass from the soil that cedar used up. In fact, a cow couldn't have climbed up the granite rock at all. It's only good for scenery, for picnics, for me to show to folks like Stuart Udall and Lawrence Rockefeller. Sometimes it seems like with every step you take forward, you drop back too. And yet I know it's because Dale has enough work to do for 3 men, and because sometimes he doesn't always understand my own objectives about the ranch. Sometimes my objectives necessarily clash with those of a good rancher. It'd been a great 5 days, but I was weary and quite content to sink into solitude and silence, and I found that my 2-day bout with a sore throat and a little fever had left me more tired than I would have expected. My vigorous 4 days and this rather quiet today left me knowing I owed my body something. Just rest. I talked to Lyndon. What had he been doing? Cost reduction awards, agriculture employees, a little ceremony in the Department of Agriculture patio. Freeman sure works at his job, and he's sure a cooperating man. Then an award to the Teacher of the Year. Then the usual weekly lunch with Rusk and McNamara and Walt Rostow and Bill Moyers. This time Admiral David MacDonald had been with them. The story of these luncheons seems to me an outsider to be one long, determined search to find the best path through the dark forest that lies in front of us. Well, there are good men trying. Lyndon was pleased with my little tale of what had gone on in Johnson City. He'll be coming down for Easter, I think, I hope. It's what he needs.